It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Craig Giacomine, owner of Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. In the aftermath of Francine, what should you know if you're considering getting a generator? You don't want to be out there just buying anything. You want to make sure that you approach this appropriately, and he's here to help us through that process. Craig, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noah. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well, Craig. So obviously people's interest in procuring a generator goes up substantially in the aftermath of a storm once they've experienced the inconvenience of losing power and they recognize all the challenges that that places upon them. I got to imagine they're out there, they're looking, right?
That's happening. But, you know, we see a lot of it. I call it panic buying, where you know, homeowners will go in there and they're just grabbing anybody that's selling generators. And there's a whole process. There's a whole process with that. You know, I always suggest, number one, look at Google reviews, right? Look at the Google reviews, see what they have. The next thing would be, are they licensed and insured, right? That's a key part in this, you know. And then if you know they're licensed and insured, then the next questions you should be asking are they a prime contractor, right? And that's what we call in construction. That means the main contractor, the general contractor. You know, are they the main person? If you're buying it from them, are they the ones who are going to put it in? Or are they going to sub out the work? And we see a lot of bad installs because of the subcontractors. You know, you'll have a company out there that's selling generators. It might be a plumbing company, AC company, electrical company. They might do part of the work, but they're subbing out a lot of the work. And what happens is now you got 2, 3, 4 contractors that you're chasing, trying to get everybody lined up. That's, you know, and with us, we've seen that as a disadvantage. So we're the one contractor. You sign up with us, we're one contractor. We're, you know, just one person you speak with, and that's just the way we operate our business. The next thing is do they have a written plan, right? And what I mean by that is that we have a top 10 questions, you know, and the top 10 questions, you know, it's how do I determine what size generator? You know, the location, how do I determine? We have answers for all of this. So we have a 10-part question that homeowners should be asking, not only us, but they should be taking this list and asking other contractors that are going to come install their home generator. The next one is site selection. That's one of the most crucial parts of a generator. Where is the generator going to go, right? You know, a lot of times we have a good idea where we want it. But then you also have, if it's too close to a window, too close to a neighbor's home, too close to the dryer vents, right? Too close to an air conditioner. It's all these other factors that come into play. And that's where we determine where the generator needs to be located. The other thing is a big part of it is payment terms, right? You don't want to give somebody 100% for a job that's coming in. You know, there should be some type of payment terms agreed upon, whether it's, you know, 50%, a third, you know, a specific deposit that's needed. And then that usually what we do is we require the payments to be paid in full after the job's completed, after the job's inspected. And that's another thing is, you know, another part of this is the inspection part, right? Inspections play a crucial role because not only you have several different parts. So there is an inspection that's done with the site selection. In most parishes, we have to submit either a survey or a Google map drop marked with the location and generator is going with all the setbacks added to it. And once we get that site selection form out, some parishes, especially Jefferson Parish, they'll actually send an inspector out to do a pre-inspection. They'll go out there to make sure, a visual inspection, to make sure that that's okay. Now, like if you look at, you know, I always say David Drive, right? So on one side, David Drive is Kenner, and on the other side, David Drive is Jefferson Parish. Even though they're both in Jefferson Parish, you have the city of Kenner. It's two different sets of generator rules. The city of Kenner, you got to be 5 feet from a home. Jefferson Parish, you have to be, you can be 18 inches off of a home if it's safe. So there are different rule changes on different areas, and that's where, you know, we come into play as the subject matter experts, and you know, we write, you know, we're constantly sending out permits every day. I mean, we have a lady, her specific job is permitting. That's how busy we are. Once the site selection is approved, you have your payment terms, installation times. That's another question you should be asking. What are your installation times? Right now, I can tell you we're probably about eight. So if somebody signs up with us, we're probably roughly 8 weeks, and we're bringing that time down because we work Saturday and Sunday. We've put in 12 generators, installed 12 brand new installs over the weekend. So we're trying to catch up with all this rain. The other question, equipment in stock. How long is it going to take to get my equipment? You know, I signed up for this generator installation. Do you have the equipment in stock? Or if you don't, what is the timeline to get that equipment in? There are some people that, you know, we've met and they canceled contracts with other companies because, you know, it's been 8-9 months. And, you know, these generators that they ordered are something that we can get within a week, right? So, you know, you have that. I have a lady that, you know, she had a contractor that came out. He's been out to our house numerous times. And every time he comes over there, he'll do a little bit of work and a little bit of work and a little bit of work. And unfortunately, right at the storm, he said, well, I can get you in right before the storm. And she's been dealing with the same contractor for 3 months. And then when they finally get to the part where they need the gas hooked up, guess what? Oh, now you need to get a plumber, right? So this lady's been sitting here for months when she could have had a plumber come out, a gas plumber, and take care of that. So we're meeting with her, and we're going to take that whole job over and get, you know, to get her equipment installed, finish out the installation of it. The other thing is, you know, one thing we like to do, we like to identify, we like to get the homeowners and say, okay, well, we know you're in an oxygen machine. You know, we're going to have to turn power off your home while we're doing this installation because we can't work on electricity while it's live. Sometimes a power outage can be from an hour. It can be 8 hours if there's a panel change out. So we like to identify any needs ahead of time. That way, if we do have to bring a portable generator to run an oxygen machine or run a windy unit in the home while the installation's going on, but we always ask for homeowners to go ahead and make prior arrangements, you know, just in case it takes a little bit longer. You know, another thing what we notice with this storm was that we had a lot of equipment damaged, and when I say equipment damaged, transfer switches, because of utility, because of surges coming in, right? And so we had some transfer switches that the utility contactor side, which we would say would be the power company side, were burned up. And what we determined is that, and we actually have a case with a picture, that utility company brought a high leg into a 120 volt side, like basically a regular outlet, supposed to be 120 mm-hmm. volts. That outlet was showing 240 volts. So we went to the meter and actually got a picture of it. And what we determined is that, look, you get these linemen, and look, they're out there trying to do the best that they can. And we're not knocking energy and we're not knocking alignment, but things do happen. And, you know, they might have a transformer and these guys are tired and you know, they're out there busting their butts in the heat and at night, and they might cross a line and realize, oh, it's only crossed for a second, but that second can damage equipment. So we have some homeowners that didn't have generators and their equipment were damaged. When we say equipment, we're saying washing machines, microwave, the stoves, the gas stoves, the controls, like the controls on there, they have like the displays, those were damaged. Now the customers that had a generator, the generator seeing all this crazy stuff going on, and the generator sees it, it's monitoring the voltage and says, well, look, I'm not going to switch over because I don't have this current coming in or this electricity coming in from utility company that's meeting my expectation. I mean, the generator's watching all this going on, and all we had was just a damaged coil. The homeowner's house is fine. You know, all the equipment in the house because the generator didn't switch over. So there are advantages to having these units, you know, but like I said, this storm right here, it brings a lot of conversations up as far as, you know, and like I said before, I just call it panic buying. You know, the homeowners want to do the right thing, and they're trusting that these contractors out there because they have a, you know, they have a business name that these are the best people for the job, and unfortunately they're not, you know, and yeah. And that's where we like to come in and educate homeowners and businesses, and you know, and look, we have a training area that we've had, you know, we sell to contractors, we sell equipment, and we have a training area, and we give training classes to the contractors that are coming to install. We want these units to be put in right and want to be put in safe.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment because you guys just purchased Gen South, which is an addition to what y'all do. They were mostly on the industrial side, but they that organization was the one that provided all the parts and replacement parts and everything else for this equipment, right?
Yeah, so GenSouth was an established industrial dealer for Generac. They taught classes for years. They were established in 2006 is when they started the business. And they were always known for having maintenance kits, parts. So they were set up to where customers can buy maintenance kits, they can buy parts, they can buy control boards. So they never really shied away from, dealing with, just saying, hey, you're a contractor, we can't deal with you as a homeowner, which I thought was fantastic. I thought that was a very good business model. The other thing is that, with them selling parts, they also sold parts to contractors. And look, before I became Craig's Electrical, I was putting these generators in on the side. I was a technician through Generac, but I didn't technically have a company. So I was just putting them in the evenings and weekends. And GenSouth played a major part, buying generators from them, buying parts. Well, they, over the years, they just started just losing business. They couldn't get a lot of good technicians, so they started just kind of going downhill, and they were on the verge of just closing the shop down. I caught wind because some of their former employees worked for us, so I caught wind that they were looking to close down, and we made the acquisition the day of Hurricane Francine to get those parts over from there to us so we can get these parts out to contractors, different companies. I had an AC place call up, and they bought 9 controllers, and we have the controllers. We did 24-hour shipping. They just came in. We're getting them to them. I've come out this morning. I'm not going to mention the company's name, but it's a very big generator company nationwide, and they were buying parts. They had their trucks here buying parts from us this morning because they know we're open back up. We actually built a parts counter over the weekend. We get the other part being installed right now, so we're going to go into the full-time parts business. But I can tell you this, if GenSouth closed, our communities, whether it's businesses, commercial businesses, industrial businesses, as well as homeowners, we would be in trouble without that business. And to lose that would have been a shame. And like I said, we're going to make GenSouth bigger and better than what it was before, because we feel that it's never reached its full potential. And I'm excited that part of the business, that we just bought, that's going to take off. I'm really excited about that.
A lot of people talking about natural gas pressure. What's the latest on that?
So from what we were seeing, certain areas, I think it was Terrebonne Parish, they had a significant drop in gas pressure. So these generators in your home appliances need 6, they call it inches of water column. So it's the gas pressure that comes in, and they're set up for 6 to 8 inches of water column. Some houses have higher pressure, which is a 2-pound gas system, but you also have a regulator that will drop it down to 6 to 8 inches of water column for that equipment to work. Some gas meters just are regulated coming out the ground. Now, the ground side, most areas, is 80 pounds, and it drops it down to 6 to 8 inches of water column for the home's appliances to work. Well, from what we were hearing, we was told that the areas were seeing like 1 to 2 inches of water column pressure, which that's not enough to even light your stove or light your water heater up. That's just not enough fuel. So some areas, yes, they had issues. As far as the New Orleans metro area, no issues with gas pressure, none from what I heard. Now, I did hear that there were some areas, because I'm in these different generator groups and stuff, some areas that do have low gas pressure, they'll bring in these trucks to actually put, it's basically almost think of like a compressor, and they boost the gas pressure up. But what's happening is that, and this is another thing that people don't understand, is that when you go out there and you just put a generator in without a permit, without notifying any Atmos or anything, you have a lot of generators that put in. And what happens is Atmos doesn't, maybe Energy, the gas part company with New Orleans, they don't know. And all they see is this gas pressure coming down. So when you fill out permits, the gas company is going to be aware of, that you're putting the generator in. So then they know what actions to take if they have to start upgrading gas lines, if they have to put another lift station or another station in to boost the pressure up. So there's different parts and pieces to this, but that's way beyond what my pay grade right now. But I just talk right to the gas guys and stuff like that, and that's what they tell me, is that it's important to make sure that these jobs are permitting, so that way they know. I know a couple of years ago in Pauline, I have a friend that lived in the subdivision, nice big gas line across the street from this new neighborhood. And there was a bottleneck, that gas line went down to a smaller size. I'm just going to throw a number out there. Let's say if it was like an 8-inch gas line and it had an 8-inch gas line in the neighborhood, the connecting gas line might have been 4 inches, and it was an older gas line, and it was a bottleneck. So they had to go back in there and de-bottleneck. So that's what the gas companies are starting to do. right here by our shop on Veterans. They've been putting all new gas lines and a lot bigger lines, so we've been seeing a lot of action in that. So, but a lot of your rural areas will sustain lower gas pressure. Now, the next thing, what people don't understand, and we try to explain to them, is that when your neighborhood grocery stores decide to build, you know, we want these super centers, and I can mention names, but when we build these big places, they have 8-inch gas lines, 6-inch gas lines that they you know, hook up to these stores for backup generator power. And then, all you know, your generator's been working fine for years, and all of a sudden you start having gas issues. Well, it's going to these big box stores to their backup power. So there is a battle back and forth. So,
but the moral to the story is you need to be with someone that understands all of this, because there are a lot of different silos. It's not just the generator itself. There are a lot of other disciplines involved. So do your homework is what you're saying. Don't panic buy. People will make promises that they can't keep, and you want to check all of them out. Craig Giacomino with Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time and your insight. Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're learning more about the individual that wanted to shoot Donald Trump, Ryan Wesley Ruth, 58. He's in custody after aiming a rifle barrel towards Trump when he was golfing at his golf course in West Palm Beach, Florida, yesterday. Joining us on the line is Donald Lane, former Secret Service agent. Donald, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheriff. Good to be here.
Donald, people asking a lot of questions. Almost successful, one thwarted attempt here within a very short period of time. Historically, I can't ever remember a time where they had two attempts on a former president or candidate for president, and I don't know if that's ever happened in history.
It hasn't. No, that's an unprecedented event, for sure.
So your thoughts, I mean, people are kind of wondering, you know, where are we in this country, and if there's anything that can actually be done by Secret Service or any other agency to minimize these risks?
Well, you know, I think that the Secret Service needs to take a good hard look at the kind of the paradigm that they've had for decades, certainly as long as I was there. And what that is that the, you know, the president of the United States and the vice president and their families kind of get the full complement of protection. And for a former president and sometimes a candidate, depending on what the threat matrix is, you dial that back to some point, you know, so that the full protective advances and so forth are with the people that hold the office. But I think that needs to be revisited, certainly. Especially when you have, in this case, you know, a former president of the United States who's also running again for president, which is in itself unusual. And then, you know, is known worldwide and carries with him a lot of divisiveness. And so, you know, I think the agency needs to take a look at that and, I believe, dedicate more personnel, put a stronger package together, so to speak, not only for the advances with public events, but also for private events.
Would you agree that when you have actionable intelligence that Iran, obviously we know what's going on in the Middle East, they're fighting a proxy war, they do this well. They have put out there through the intelligence channels that they want to take Donald Trump out. That in and of itself, our response should be a little bit more robust? Or do we just not believe the intelligence?
No, I mean, you have to live and die by your intelligence, you know. Absolutely, there should be an appropriate response. I don't think what we're seeing is it. You know, I don't want to speak to exactly what the package was relative to this most recent incident. But, you know, the fact that I'm even saying the words second attempt, you know, on his life is just, it's unprecedented. And I'm hoping and believing that the Secret Service will respond now with an even more personnel and an even larger footprint with respect to former President Trump.
Donald, I'm sure you have had opportunities to talk to your peers, people that you've worked with over the years in the Secret Service. I hear that there's just there's a change. There's a change in the approach. Obviously, they're taxed like other first responder agencies. I hear there's probably as many as 1,000 vacancies. I don't know how big Secret Service is now. When I started my career, it wasn't that big. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know, the Secret Service remains a very small agency compared to other agencies. You know, I think max that I've ever heard in terms of agents is around, you know, maybe 1,900, 2,000 agents. So when you get into a campaign year where you have multiple candidates running around that have Secret Service protection, it puts a tremendous strain on the men and women of the Secret Service. You couple that with the fact that the agency has, in my opinion, one of the most stringent background and hiring processes that in some cases take up to a year to complete. It makes it difficult, you know, and then the schedule of your run-of-the-mill Secret Service agent makes it difficult to continue to keep people, you know, who maybe decide this isn't for them, they didn't know they'd be away this long, that type of thing. So all of those are real things that the agency faces, and I believe that, you know, the key to making things better lies within those issues that we just discussed. And I'm hoping that the agency will respond to this. Most of the men and women I worked with are, you know, the finest men and women that I've ever known. I don't think this problem is at the boots on the ground level. I think it's, you know, it's higher in the administration of the Secret Service, and I'm hoping that they'll respond to these challenges appropriately.
Well, is there an ideological warfare going on? I mean, we talked to the House Majority Leader, Steve Scalise. I don't know if you heard the interview earlier. He talked about, you know, how these principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion permeating through the agency, where it's really not about meritocracy. You know as well as I, a lot of what y'all are tasked to do, a lot of what you need to do, requires physicality. It requires mental fortitude, emotional intelligence, and when you're willing to accept less, what happens?
Well, you know, what potentially happens is what's happened here, you know, and I don't want to say that that's, you know, to blame for all of the problems that the agency seems to be having, but I will tell you that one of my fears is that the agency is suffering from, you know, what I call political capture. Being influenced by politics, which there is absolutely no place in any federal agency, but especially in the Secret Service, for there to be any political leanings. You wouldn't want to see for instance, one party be in power and tell the Secret Service director, hey, you know, we feel like you're making this candidate look too presidential or something like that. You need to dial back. Now, I'm not saying that that happened in these cases, but that's something that needs to be looked into during these investigations that are ongoing. There is simply no place for any of that in the, you know, from hiring all the way through agents working in the agency, that they should not be influenced by any politics. They certainly shouldn't be influenced by any diversion or equity placements that are put on the agency. You know, it should be, we're going to hire the best and brightest, the fittest, and we're going to bring them on board.
Do you think there would be value in the head of the Secret Service being confirmed by the Senate?
There could be. You know, I don't know. I'd have to study that more and know a whole lot about it. I don't know, though, if that would bring it even more into, you know, the political stratosphere or not. That's really not something that I can speak intelligently to. I don't see necessarily how it could hurt. So, you know, I don't know. I guess that's one of the options on the table, though.
I mean, there has been a lot of criticism of the former head that resigned. As it relates to that individual's move through up the corporate ladder, and you know, and it seemed as though it might have been more of a friendship thing with the First Lady as opposed to anything else. No one knows, but I mean, the fact of the matter is that would be vetted, obviously, in that process, whereby you know it's just simply almost like a regular hire. And right. It just seems to me that there should be a heightened scrutiny in and around that position because of the importance of what they do, especially when when our elected leaders are traveling abroad, right? I mean, I have to imagine that's some of the most difficult missions that y'all have to staff up, right?
Absolutely, yes. Foreign travel is a beast within the agency. The logistics involved are mind-boggling. And no, I agree with what you're saying. I do think that, you know, whether it's Senate confirmation or not, I do believe there should be some type of system set up where if you're going to hire for the top positions in the agency, that they are well vetted and that it's not simply, hey, this is a friendly person that I know from the agency or someone that I grew to like, and I'm just going to appoint them. You know, that's certainly not good.
No. Yeah. I mean, that whole process then becomes as what I coin as less than. And, you know, it seems to me that we ought to place a higher value on what it is that we're doing and a sense of, not that they're not serious, but a sense of being more serious about what it is that we are tasking these individuals to do, because they're risking their lives every day. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
You know, I don't know about you, but the rank and file, they want an effective and credible leader more than anything. One who can make a decision, one who's not going to vacillate, and one who's going to be determined in their leadership. And it just seems to me that the process by which we pick these people should be improved upon at the very least. And that way, you know, hopefully the culture of the organization is not diminished in any way, shape or form. Donald Lane, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time and your insight, and have a great week.
Thank you, Newell. Be safe. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, my friend. Donald Lane, former Secret Service agent. We'll be right back with Jeff Nowak to talk about what a win, right? Boy, was that fun watching that game. I just really love watching the Saints fans after that game. They gave Dallas a dose of New Orleans for sure. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell. Thanks for having me. That was fun yesterday, wasn't it?
I was going to say, you had to have like a total blast on the sidelines. I want you to know I'm jealous. I'm envious. It had to have been a lot of fun.
Oh, it sure was. The Saints kind of had a parade in AT&T Stadium, and then a bunch of Saints fans had a parade outside AT&T Stadium. I was thinking about this morning, how many fan bases are there in the NFL that travel with a tuba? Because it seems like Saints do. But no, but one of my favorites, like, I love watching games in the Superdome, right? It's one of the most fun times I have ever had in my life is, like, watching the crowd get into it the way they did in week one. But I almost enjoy a little bit more going on the road and just looking around and watching just the dejected faces of Cowboys fans. And it was like that for three quarters up in Green Bay last year. Because, man, it's like they were so hyped up, and all you heard all week was that they'd won 16 consecutive home games. And now how quickly that narrative has turned to actually they've lost two consecutive home games if you go back to the playoff matchup, and they've gotten dog-walked in both of them and have been embarrassed. But, no, I mean, this Saints team, it's, you know, there was a lot of question marks going into this season. I think a lot of people were – kind of on the fence about how they felt about it. I don't think a lot of people necessarily felt committed to Dennis Allen or Derek Carr or the way this kind of operation since John Payton had left had gone and how far it might go into the future. But, man, the winning games the way you have over the first 2 weeks of the season, that'll work wonders to kind of inject some confidence into the fan base, because that's 40 points in back-to-back weeks three. If you go back to the week 18 of last season, that's not normal. And this team is really a lot of fun to watch.
One of the things yesterday, and you were there, you saw it, watching it on TV, it seemed to me that the Saints offense really confounded the Dallas defense. It's almost as if they really couldn't figure out what was coming their way next. And like they had the wrong defense called multiple times. Did you get that same feeling?
You know, I think I understand why you say that, but I almost think that doesn't give enough credit to the play caller, because I think it was not necessarily that Dallas had no idea what was coming and they were constantly in the wrong defense. It's that the Saints just had all the answers, right? Like you put a test out there and you just know all the answers to the test. And you know, the Cowboys linebackers are trying to be hyper-aggressive and get up toward the line to stop the run. You hit them with a middle screen and let Alvin get out in space, and suddenly that aggression works against them. And it's just – and I think that's what Alvin said after the game. It felt like a practice rep because it was the perfect call at the perfect time. And, you know, Rashid Shaheed on any safety is a mismatch. But, you know, I think that's really what it was about. Like, that's a good Cowboys defense. I think Micah Parsons described it coming out of the game, like trying to get to the quarterback was like going through a maze because of the scheme that they had and the way that they were able to send, you know, the Rashid touchdown was a good example of it, because you started off with kind of a strong side to the right with Adam Prentice and Foster Moreau lined up outside of Trevor Penning. And to all the world, it looks like, hey, we're going to max protect and give Trevor help on that side. But then you watch how the play develops and Adam Prentice and Foster Moreau actually work over to the left side. You have Talia Sefuaga help toward the middle with Lucas Patrick. And then you have Foster Moreau and Adam Prentice actually blocking DeMarcus Lawrence on that side and leave Trevor Penning one-on-one with Michael Parsons. And it's just those looks and the ability to kind of change what the defense is looking at. Pre-snap, but post-alignment, it's just clearly the Cowboys just could not handle it. And it's a similar scheme that they faced against the Packers in the playoffs, and they didn't handle it then well either. The other element is Alvin Kamara seems to gain superpowers whenever he's going against the Mike Zimmer defensive scheme. If you go back to that Christmas Day matchup, the last two games, Alvin Kamara has faced Mike Zimmer teams, which Mike Zimmer is the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys now. He was the head coach of the Vikings back in that 2020 season. He's got 10 touchdowns in those two games. it was 6 rushing touchdowns on Christmas Day, and then he had 3 rushing touchdowns and then a long receiving touchdown in this game. Man, when it's going, it's going. And everything seemed to work yesterday.
This is not going to be the right terminology, you know, because I don't do what y'all do. But it seemed to me that both offensively and defensively, the Saints were very efficient. Their tackling was sound. Their blocking was sound. You know, when they on offense, when there was a seam that was created, it seemed like the vision of the backs was huge. They saw the seam, they hit the seam, and with every run, it almost seemed like they got an extra 2 or 3 yards. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it kind of felt like they were running downhill a little bit, didn't it? You know, when you saw them get outside the tackles on third down, it's like, okay, they're getting there. It's just going to be a matter of which gap they attack. But no, I mean, you look at that game, and Derek Carr only threw the ball 16 times. He had 11 completions. He put up 44 points. That's crazy. It felt like more.
When I looked at the stats, I was like, wait a minute. No, he threw the ball more. That's got to be a misprint.
Right.
That's what it felt like, right? 50-yard
touchdown passes. The yardage climbs up quickly. Honestly, the only thing the offense didn't do particularly well was, you know, give the defense time to rest on the sideline because you were scoring so quickly. And you know, the defense, I thought, did a good job of, you know, the Dallas only got to the end zone once. They allowed some drives. It was a bend but don't break situation. The only touchdown was that kind of Vikings flashback from the playoffs where two guys had a chance at CeeDee Lamb and they both kind of bounced off. And even with that, you know, I thought that was a really strong day for the defense. And it just, the way they've been complementing each other on the offense and the defensive side of the ball, timely, you know, even the one bad play for the offense, the interception, next play, Tyrann Mathieu gets the ball right back. It's just
right back.
When you're able to do stuff like that and the offense is able to support the defense and the defense is able to support the offense, you can win games the way the Saints have the last 2 weeks.
Only one sack allowed by the Saints against Derek Carr and 62% third down efficiency. Those are two stats that I absolutely love. And if they can do that week in and week out, we'll be in good shape for sure. Jeff Nowak, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time, your insight. Big game this week, though. This may be one of the biggest tests of the season, right?
No question. But, hey, I think there's going to be a lot. I think the narrative around this game, going into this game, is going to sound a lot different for the Saints than it did going into this week. I'm excited for it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Have a great week.
For sure, Newell. Thanks.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell. Thanks for having me. That was fun yesterday, wasn't it?
I was going to say, you had to have like a total blast on the sidelines. I want you to know I'm jealous. I'm envious. It had to have been a lot of fun.
Oh, it sure was. The Saints kind of had a parade in AT&T Stadium, and then a bunch of Saints fans had a parade outside AT&T Stadium. I was thinking about this morning. How many fan bases are there in the NFL that travel with a tuba? Because it seems like Saints do. But one of my favorites, like, I love watching games in the Superdome, right? It's one of the most fun times I have ever had in my life is, like, watching a crowd get into it the way they did in week one. But I almost enjoy a little bit more going on the road and just looking around and watching just the dejected faces of Cowboys fans. And it was like that for three quarters up in Green Bay last year. Because, man, it's like they were so hyped up, and all you heard all week was that they'd won 16 consecutive home games. And now how quickly that narrative has turned to actually they've lost 2 consecutive home games if you go back to the playoff matchup, and they've gotten dog-walked in both of them and have been embarrassed. But this Saints team, it's, you know, there was a lot of question marks going into this season. I think a lot of people were kind of on the fence about how they felt about it. I don't think a lot of people necessarily felt committed to Dennis Allen or Derek Carr or the way this kind of operation since John Payton had left had gone and how far it might go into the future. But, man, winning games the way you have over the first 2 weeks of the season, that'll work wonders to kind of inject some confidence into the fan base, because that's 40 points in back-to-back weeks three. If you go back to the week 18 of last season, that's not normal. And this team is really a lot of fun to watch.
One of the things yesterday, and you were there, you saw it, watching it on TV, it seemed to me that the Saints offense really confounded the Dallas defense. It's almost as if they really couldn't figure out what was coming their way next. And like they had the wrong defense called multiple times. Did you get that same feeling?
You know, I think I understand why you say that, but I almost think that doesn't give enough credit to the play caller, because I think it was more – it was not necessarily that Dallas had no idea what was coming and they were constantly in the wrong defense. It's that the Saints just had all the answers, right? Like you put a test out there and you just know all the answers to the test, and, you know, the Dallas Cowboys linebackers are trying to be hyper-aggressive and get up toward the line to stop the run. You hit him with a middle screen and let Alvin get out in space, and suddenly that aggression works against them. And it's just, and I think that's what Alvin said after the game. It felt like a practice rep because it was the perfect call at the perfect time. And, you know, Rashid Shaheed on any safety is a mismatch. But, you know, I think that's really what it was about. Like, that's a good Cowboys defense. I think Micah Parsons described it coming out of the game, like, trying to get to the quarterback was like going through a maze because of the scheme that they had and the way that they were able to send, you know, the Rashid touchdown was a good example of it, because you started off with kind of a strong side to the right with Adam Prentice and Foster Moreau lined up outside of Trevor Penning, and to all the world it looks like, hey, we're going to max protect and give Trevor help on that side. But then you watch how the play develops and Adam Prentice and Foster Moreau actually work over to the left side. You have Talia Seifuaga help toward the middle with Lucas Patrick, and then you have Foster Moreau and Adam Prentice actually blocking DeMarcus Lawrence on that side, and leave Trevor Penning one-on-one with Micah Parsons. And it's just those looks and the ability to kind of change what the defense is looking at post-snap, or I'm sorry, pre-snap, but post-alignment. It's just clearly the Cowboys just could not handle it. And it's a similar scheme that they faced against the Packers in the playoffs, and they didn't handle it then well either. The other element is Alvin Kamara seems to gain superpowers whenever he's going against the Mike Zimmer defensive scheme. If you go back to that Christmas Day matchup, the last two games, Alvin Kamara has faced Mike Zimmer teams, which Mike Zimmer is the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys now. He was the head coach of the Vikings back in that 2020 season. He's got 10 touchdowns in those two games. it was 6 rushing touchdowns on Christmas Day, and then he had 3 rushing touchdowns and then a long receiving touchdown in this game. Man, when it's going, it's going. And everything seemed to work yesterday.
This is not going to be the right terminology, you know, because I don't do what y'all do. But it seemed to me that both offensively and defensively, the Saints were very efficient. Their tackling was sound. Their blocking was sound. When there was a seam that was created, it seemed like the vision of the backs was huge. They saw the seam. They hit the seam. And with every run, it almost seemed like they got an extra 2 or 3 yards. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it kind of felt like they were running downhill a little bit, didn't it? You know, when you saw them get outside the tackles on third down, it's like, oh, they're getting there. It's just going to be a matter of which gap they attack. You look at that game, and Derek Carr only threw the ball 16 times. He had 11 completions. You put up 44 points. That's crazy.
It felt like more. When I looked at the stats, I was like, wait a minute. No, he threw the ball more. That's got to be a misprint.
Right.
That's what it felt like, right?
Yard touchdown passes, it's the yardage.
Yeah, well,
yardage
it helps.
Climbs up quickly. Honestly, the only thing the offense didn't do particularly well was, you know, give the defense time to rest on the sideline because you were scoring so quickly. And, you know, the defense, I thought, did a good job of, you know, the Dallas only got to the end zone once. They allowed some drives. It was a bend but don't break situation. The only touchdown was that kind of Vikings flashback from the playoffs where two guys had a chance at CeeDee Lamb and they both kind of bounced off. And even with that, you know, I thought it was a really strong day for the defense. And it just, the way they've been complementing each other on the offense and the defensive side of the ball, timely, you know, even the one bad play for the offense, the interception, next play, Tyrann Mathieu gets the ball right back. It's just
right back.
When you're able to do stuff like that and the offense is able to support the defense and the defense is able to support the offense, you can win games the way the Saints have the last 2 weeks.
Only one sack allowed by the Saints against Derek Carr, and 62% third down efficiency. Those are two stats that I absolutely love. And if they can do that week in and week out, we'll be in good shape for sure. Jeff Nowak, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time, your insight. Big game this week, though. This may be one of the biggest tests of the season, right?
No question. But, hey, I think there's going to be a lot. I think the narrative around this game, going into this game, is going to sound a lot different for the Saints than it did going into this week. I'm excited for it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Have a great week.
For sure, Newell. Thanks.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.